You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Guys, today I'm bringing you my podcast with Jim Gray. Jim is the vocalist of a band called Caligula's Horse. It's an Australian progressive metal band that I really, really like. He's also, as you're going to hear, a very thoughtful guy. He also has his own podcast. You can find his podcast, Music in Everything Podcast, on Instagram and twitch.tv/TheRealJimGray. And now, enjoy my conversation with Jim Gray.
And we're off.
So I am here today with Jim Gray, vocalist from Caligula's Horse. Jim, I will have given you a bigger, probably potted bio, somewhat inflated, somewhat fantastical right beforehand, so you don't have to worry about that.
That's exciting.
First of all, how are you today?
I'm doing well. It's been a stressful, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of things at home. And a lot of things with the band as well, and I'm tired all the time, but outside of that, fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. So for some perspective for everyone, for what he just said, Caligula's Horse seems like they've done a lot of touring. Basically, you guys really hit the ground running right after the lockdown.
Yeah, we tried to. It took us the whole 3-year, nearly 4-year gap to sort of get back on the road internationally, because it's hard enough doing international tours as an Australian to begin with, let alone, you know, post-COVID and in the world that we know, the world that we now know. It's been insane. We did a run through Europe and then Latin America, and then culminating in Prog Power Festival in USA, in Georgia, and that was a delight. But good to be home on solid ground. It's just a little bit tiring.
How would you say these have gone? Were they what you expected? Was the audience what you expected? Was your mental health what you expected?
That's an interesting question. I kind of like, on the mental health side of things, it was actually a lot better than I expected, because when you haven't done something for a really long time, particularly something that felt second nature previously, like, you know, playing a lot of shows and touring and stuff, you kind of wonder, like, am I still able to do this? You know, am I still like... capable. It turns out we are, and the band dynamic and all of our mental health as a group and as individuals was amazing. In terms of the shows, like, I set my sights very low, because it had been a long time. We hadn't released an album since 2020 with Rise Radiant, and of course we weren't able to tour on that, so like I had no idea whether we'd even have half of the number of people that were interested last time we were in Europe along, and it turns out there were even more. So, you know, we were playing these great shows to heaps of wonderful people all across the continent there, and Latin America was a dream, as always, full of lovely people who just want to sing as loud as they possibly can, to the point where sometimes I couldn't hear myself, which was pretty amazing.
which is well deserved. Listeners of this podcast and people who follow me will know that I am a big fan of the band.
No.
Which brings me to my more pressing questions. Yes. Some of it regards mental health, but it's a broader critique. I want to tell you a little story of how I came in, for lack of a better phrase, in contact with Caligula's Horse. I it was just randomly on a Spotify playlist one day. A song came up. I'm pretty sure it was Songs for No One. And I remember it was totally disconnected that this had happened. But I was searching, this is probably about 2017. It was right around when I had started my own band. And I was sort of searching for the destruction of the narrative of the tortured artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone through this very interesting journey in trying to kind of consciously destroy it. And then in talking to actually Sam about what has gone on in the actual band, I found out some very, very interesting things. I found out that, after talking to Sam, that the trope of the tortured artist is something that you guys seem to hold as somewhat villainous.
Mm.
But I have also subsequently learned that despite this mature perspective, there was another perspective, at least from you, that maybe evolved into this. And I wonder about the balance between, the guy who can create something and do something to the best of his ability and something that is so distinctly emotional, and how it's connected to this woe is me side of existence. And I wonder if you could talk about that for a second.
Well, I definitely dove into that a lot in the old days. I think when I was younger, it's a lot easier to kind of enjoy the smell of your own shit. I mean, especially when it's like, when it comes to you being interesting, it's like, if you can have something interesting and exciting and wrong with you, then isn't that fun? And you can sort of identify around that and sort of make that a core part of your personality and all of that. And I definitely did that with a lot of kind of depression stuff and a lot of anger stuff and a lot of ego stuff when I was younger, for sure. But, I think the idea, like the frustration that I have with the trope of the tortured artist, is that it is an excuse and it's exploitative. So for example, we're seeing people who are able to create and who, like me, have had, heaps of mental health struggles and stuff, and a lot of their artistry is caught up in that journey they've been on and their unique insight based on all of that. And yet they struggle so hard with that, that they end up, in either dead or abandoned or whatever else. And everyone else just kind of looks at that with that's the price that they pay for our enjoyment kind of thing. That's the price that, some people burn brighter than others. It's like, no, well, maybe check on him once in a while, maybe ask, So I feel like it's kind of a real, it's a trap and it's exploitative, and it's a way that kind of, people can kind of pat themselves on the back for not doing anything when it comes to people struggling, because it's just, they're supposed to. The idea is that you're supposed to. And that also sort of bleeds into the idea that you as an artist, if you buy that, if you drink that Kool-Aid and you believe that bullshit, you like accept that about yourself. You struggle and you go through this awful experience and it's like, oh yeah, but this is what it takes for me to be able to create. And if I got rid of that, then I wouldn't be able to create anymore. And it's lies, because, I pursued medication for mental health stuff. And the minute that happened and I kind of found a little bit of balance, I was able to create way more and way more regularly and way more in a controlled and professional kind of approach. So it's like all the things that I had been missing from the creative space were being sort of held from me by this torture, which is then lauded and celebrated by people who don't understand. So yeah, that's my big problem. It's a trap for everybody and it's not good for anyone, and we should stop doing it.
So I like how you put that. You encapsulated it nicely. You almost made it seem like it's almost like a fight or a football game where everyone's kind of marveling at like the misery and kind of not necessarily getting off on the misery, but it's like they're kind of there to see the weird freakish thing that someone is suffering within.
Yeah, it's have a little kind of, it's almost like a voyeuristic gladiatorial arena. Like where they kind of, you know, they have a glimpse through the window at what it must be like to experience certain things like that. And then you can walk away and go, interesting. And then have your lovely day without sort of caring if that person doesn't make it on account of doing this for
right. You go to the artistic space. You go to the artistic space. You're expecting to see the artsy things, and here are the artsy things.
Yeah, and then you sort of dehumanize people. I think it's yet another way. I know it's not unique to music. Obviously, all creative space is very similar with this, but it's yet another way that people kind of objectify artists a little bit, because to assume that someone is like the tortured artist trope, and that they are, you know, oh, they're struggling and therefore their art's going to be fucking fantastic, dehumanizes them in a way, because all you've done is you've reduced them to an art manufacturing complex. You know, you make good things, especially when we push the sad button. Can't wait to see what comes out of that. Instead of going like, I'm really sad that Jim is sad. I mean, the thing is, I don't know. I feel like if you were a real fan of what we do, or like love what we do, and you heard that, you know, say we have to stop forever because Jim's going to freaking top himself if he has to do one more thing. You probably feel some disappointment. Like, that's a shame. That's a real shame. But then afterwards, I'd love to think that you'd go like, well, I'm glad Jim's taking care of himself. And, you know, it's a shame we won't get any more, but I'm glad he's still with us. Instead of like, fuck, man, one more album would have been nice. Maybe we could just squeeze that out. And then, you know, it's like, I don't like it.
Oh, bloody hell, man. When you put it that way, it's almost like, you know, the German word Schadenfreude?
Yeah.
Is it like that? Is that sort of what this
is? Well, I mean,
is?
I think it's less kind of vindictive than that. Like, his Schadenfreude is a fun word to begin with. But also, it's like, I think people are passively doing this. You know, we saw it a lot during the pandemic. I don't think this is like an active thought process that people go through. So they're not being vindictive or harsh or harmful or anything. It's just that they don't see the humanity in what you do. All they see is kind of how they enjoy what you create, I suppose, like their kind of view of it. Yeah. So you would see a lot of things early in the pandemic with people going like, oh man, this is such a hard time. This is so awful. We're all in this together. And geez, I can't wait to see what great art my favorite artists are going to come out with during this time. And my response to that internally was like, holy shit, fuck you. Oh my God. Like, how dare you? Like, I'm stuck too. You know, I'm trapped too. Here I am. Like, struggling.
You were super trapped. You were in Australia.
Yeah, that, and also we like, our industry, I mean, a lot of other people could shift to working from home, and I know, again, this isn't unique to music, and I don't want to specify that, but, like, our industry got turned upside down. The rug got pulled out from under our feet, and everything that we were promised was gone. Everything that we'd worked for was gone. So it's like, to then hear somebody go like, oof, this is going to be so great for the next record, it was just like, yeah, maybe take a second to think about that next time, bro.
I mean, that being said, I know you've been working on music.
Oh, we have. We have. And it's very good. So as it turns out, it's fine.
It's an appropriate segue. I mean, I'm not going to actually get there right now. I'm coming back to that. I'm circling back around to that. Yeah. But that is a really interesting perspective. I wonder, do you reciprocate maybe like... there's a frustration on the part of the fan sometimes where they want to get close to you and they kind of want to know you, but also that relationship is wholly inappropriate in some ways, because the only thing you have in common with a fan necessarily is that they like the music you create, which, as I'm sure you know from firsthand discovery, might not really mean too much in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Music is this very visceral experience that really can connect people who are very, very emotionally and psychologically diverse. So the fact that you know, fans kind of dehumanize artists in this way, I think that you're right about this, by the way. And I think it's a very interesting lens through which to see that dehumanization. But you know, the fact that they do that is rather unsurprising in a way.
Well, I mean, because it comes from a place of love, which is why it's kind of like a tricky thing to talk about, because I don't want to sit here and kind of go like, eh, fucking people and their shitty opinions, because, like, the fact is it comes from the fact that they love our stuff so much, but they, you know, they do see us as these figures, and you do see that in a really good way and a bad way sometimes. But, like, when you're touring, people come up to you and they're really familiar with you, And I've done it. I fucking did it to Devin Townsend once. I didn't even realize when I met Devin Townsend for the first time, we were playing in the same festival in Barcelona. And he was down in the sort of the cafe area downstairs, and we were all having breakfast at roughly the same time. And I walked past him, and I was kind of trying to pluck up the nerve because I'm a huge fan, man. I'm like an enormous fan. I'm a total dork. And like, eventually I walked up to him and I'm like, "Hey, Devin, how's it going, man? Great show yesterday." And he's like, "Oh, thank you. We talked for a little bit." And he just kind of paused and went like, "I'm sorry. Do we know each other?" Like, obviously I hadn't introduced myself. I hadn't said anything. I just walked up and just bleh at him. And I'm like, "Oh, sorry, dude." And I introduced myself and he was really sweet about it. And he's a lovely guy. But I know exactly what it feels like to walk up to somebody who, for all intents and purposes, they've been a part of your life for like, Christ, a decade or something. Like, I mean, clearly the source have been around since 2011. You know, we might have fans who were freaking.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What, 12 years old and their dad brought the album home and they listened, they fell in love with it, and now they're like in their early 20s, early to mid 20s. Yeah. And we've always been there. In all of their musical memories, we have always been there. And like, so you can imagine, they walk up to you and it's like, "Oh, it's Jim. Holy shit. Hi." As though they know you. And I get nervous because my memory is fucking awful. So I'm never quite sure if somebody is somebody that I've met and I know and I should know, or whether it's somebody new that is just walking up and is being familiar. I'm not sure. But regardless, that same tone of familiarity, that like, "Oh, wow," is reflected in the negative way of the whole, like, you know, like, "Oh, that's Jim from Caligula's Horse. That's not Jim Gray, human person, father, husband, etc. You know, brother, son, all the other things that I am. It's just Jim from Caligula's Horse."
Yeah. Okay. So that's a great explanation of that. And that's a great perspective into that. I think it's also powerful for people to realize that musicians can be fans.
Oh, yeah.
You really have to stop your, yeah. Well, but like, we're the biggest fans a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You know, we're like the guys who've been sitting in our room trying to do the thing for, you know, 3 decades sometimes. Yeah. Okay. So, shifting course a little bit here. I want to ask you, you have been working on new music, and I was just hoping some perspective on where the band is musically. Obviously there's been a lot of evolution. I feel like even since In Contact, a lot has like changed in the band. Specifically I feel like the songwriting has gone from maybe perhaps more experimental to more direct and more of a recognizing of where the band's meat and potatoes is. And I just wonder if you could speak to that a little bit.
That's an interesting observation. And that's not something that's necessarily going to stay true, but it is true. Because that was essentially the mission statement for Rise Radiant. You know, so we had In Contact in 2017, and that was like this big concept album, you know, 4 chapters, all these themes, these recurring things, you know, big long side length song with Graves, that kind of stuff. And with Rise Radiant, we went like, okay, well, let's challenge ourselves and do something a little bit different. Let's try and write really concise and punchy tunes. We're going to try and, you know, tell our stories in a really concise way. We're going to be really direct with it, and it's going to have a really powerful and positive message. That was kind of like the mission statement when we began, like, what do we want to do? Bang, this. And so that's what we ended up doing. I will say that's not necessarily the direction that sort of the newer stuff has taken. I can't talk about it very much, but what kind of has changed is, hilariously, based on what I was saying before, it has changed a lot based on the experiences of the pandemic and everything that we went through, there was a lot of stuff that has changed the way that we kind of view things. So there's a bit that's going to be different, but we're very, very proud of it. I think one of the interesting things when you talk about like the journey and how the music develops and changes in terms of songwriting and experience, I think that like touring the world will always change you fundamentally as a person, but especially if when it comes to being a creative, because I think a certain openness and worldliness that you get a kind of, and also sometimes a total shutdownness, like you can be away for long. Shutdownness is now a term I've just invented. But you know, if you go overseas and you just spend too far away, you find yourself being really intolerant. I just want to go home. You know, like we had this experience in 2017, 2018 touring, and then came back, and I had nothing but a need to express the kind of love and connection that I felt based on that tour and the momentum we felt from that tour. And then obviously this newer material is kind of the opposite of that. But what was funny is that material has been like finished and recorded and squared away. And the minute that we were done with that, while things are going on in the background, is we jumped on a plane and we went on tour. And again, I've had that reinvigorated in me now, that kind of like awareness, that openness, that worldliness has been kind of like revitalized. I look forward to kind of making more music on the back of that. So yeah, it just goes to show that it's like the touring and the journey and the experience of playing these songs live isn't just about the music or the promotion or the album or whatever. It also sort of provides insight into where I want to go creatively from here.
Interesting. So that's just a very symbiotic process. And it seems like that's something you can fall into a rhythm to, and you can kind of, you can pick what you want from the experience and use it to power your composing. That is something that rings very true to me. I wonder, you know, so if you're going to talk about things the way they've gone in the past in this cycle, is this the way you anticipate them going in the future? Is touring a lot something that you want? I mean, I don't even want to say you guys toured a lot as a lot. It was, you know, some bands are really out 6 months of the year.
Oh, yeah.
But is that something that you feel is coherent with your lifestyle as a father? Is that something that you can manage in the long run?
It is hard enough as it is with us doing like 3 to 5 week stints away from home. It's actually kind of like, it's our goal to not be away from home for more than 3 to 3.5 weeks at a time. Like that's genuinely something that we sort of aim for. And I think that a lot of other bands in our genre are following suit, because the long tour, first of all, we've all had our shit rocked by COVID and we're all just like, all right, priorities have changed. It's like, excuse me, it's like when you have like a death in the family or something, and all of a sudden you are reminded that it's, you know, we're all just monkeys wearing shoes and we just need to spend time with each other, and priorities need to change. It was kind of the similar with COVID, where it's like, yeah, we could go and hustle and tour for 2 to 3 months straight and then come back and not know our kids. But it would be part of a gigantic uphill fucking Sisyphean torment, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere. So what the fuck is the point? Whereas now, if we go like, we love the music we make, we love the people who love our music, let's go for 3 weeks at a time and play our music in different areas and do that, and we'll get the experience and the insight and people will enjoy it. You know, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I don't want to be on the road for more than that length of time. It's fucked up. It's not good for you.
I am interested by something you just said. Do you think that the pursuit of music is anything but Sisyphean?
Sisyphean. Yeah. Try and say that a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I feel bad for somebody with a lisp saying that. Sisyphean torment. Yeah. Well, the myth of Sisyphus, I feel like it kind of is, but in a good way on the whole. I think that, like, you know, any creative will tell you that it's just like the creatives that last are the ones that create because they must. It's like, we're not doing this to be superstars. I've made the joke before, but it's like, if I wanted to be a superstar, I wouldn't have chosen prog metal as my avenue to do so. We have a need to create. This is the skill set that we've developed. This is the stuff that we love to do, and we do it. The sort of hard part is finding yourself in this kind of mid zone that is practically unsustainable. What I mean by that is that it's like a band of our size needs to have a certain level of reach and tour and promotion in order to get to the sort of next level of being able to more comfortably do what we do and to just sort of maintain where we are. But the income and the everything that we get on the basis of us being at that level is not enough to sustain it on its own. You know, so it's like this thing where things still cost money. They're not like, you know, things are, tours are making some losses, that kind of thing, even in the position that we're at right now. That's where the kind of Sisyphean side of things comes in, and you feel like it's kind of, you know, are we ever going to get out of this hole? Because the industry is a little bit kind of geared against us in that way, particularly in Australia, I will say. That all sounds very...
But isn't it beyond that? Isn't it beyond the financials of the situation? Because if you're creating because you are powered by creation, there's never going to be a time that's going to come where you think, I'm really done. I mean, I know that it does maybe rarely happen. There's this funny interview with like Bill Bruford from Yes after Close to the Edge. He quit the band after Close to the Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was enormously powerful. He said, this is what the whole band existed for. I quit after this moment.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are these rare examples of people getting out. But I feel like the Sisyphus thing is just the most obvious kind of mythological comparison here. By the way, have you seen the Haken record, The Mountain?
I have, yeah.
Cover of that album.
Yeah.
You know that there's a Sisyphus on there.
Really?
Yeah, so I pointed it out. I've been pointing it out to people because no one notices it. He kind of blends into the background. This.
I'm just gonna open.
Yeah. You're gonna love it. Like I was staring at it the other like a year ago because I love that record and I looked hard. If you look to the left, you'll see him.
Holy shit!
Tell me when you. Yeah, you notice him.
You must be joking. Is that like
you never noticed that?
So that's like right at the bottom left. I'm not getting a high quality version of this. Thanks, Wikipedia, you jerk. That is insane. How did I never see that? I just saw him like The Mountain. There it is. I'm taking that at face value. Yep. That's wild. Very cool. We learned today.
I have a question for, as an artist, do you think that they intended for a moment like this where you don't notice it until you're thinking of Sisyphus?
I have no idea. I don't know what goes through anyone's head that's smarter than me. I kind of like... I have this, wait, I'm zooming in now because I feel like I'm going insane. There he is. Holy shit. How the fuck? I feel like I'm being lied to. That's insane. I'm going to have words.
You've uncovered this conspiracy.
Yeah. And now I've gone too deep. I'm going to lose my mind. Yeah, I have no idea what goes through other people's minds, but we have like a really interesting kind of approach to album art where we find an artist that we really love and kind of trust, and we give them an extensive kind of brief based on the content and the concepts of the album. We give them the lyrics, we give them the demos, we go like, here's the kind of framework for vibes that we like out of stuff that you've done, and then they go away and do something, and more often than not, they'll come back and we'll go, holy shit, it's something that we would never have thought of. It's totally in keeping with the sound of the album, but it's not something that, like, I would... Like, if I sat down and were like, oh, man, it'd be so good if you could do, like, a mountainscape with, like, a deer in the middle, kind of look at... You know, it's like, we wouldn't... I can't think of that stuff. That's not my job. So, like, it's not what I'm good at. So, yeah, when we work with an artist, we kind of find people we trust and then kind of develop the idea, you know, through them based on the concept of what we've got. Other bands might do it different. I don't know. Other bands might go like, hey man, could you hide Sisyphus in here to freak Jim from Caligula's horse out in years? Like lots of years. We haven't met him yet, but years from now, it's going to be
a moment.
I
think that it was purposefully subtle. It was obviously purposefully subtle.
He's camouflaged.
But I love so much, like in album covers, having metaphors like that and having like mythology kind of fleshed out in what happens. All right. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I got a couple lightning round questions.
All right.
And, pretty simple. One thing is, talk briefly about the dynamic between you and Sam. How has it changed? What is it today? And what are you looking forward to?
today it's very different from how it started, because we're totally two different people entirely now. We met years before we started working together, but I think we started working together roughly late 2010, I think, because we were sort of talking about me coming on as a guest with the Sam's then solo album, which was going to be called Caligula's Horse. And the dynamic was good. It was always fun. And that's what happened. Like, we started recording these demos and these songs and kind of going like, oh, you know what, let's just do the whole album together. And then yada, yada, yada. Then now I'm talking to you so many years later. But the thing that happened early on is that, like, lots of kind of ego clash, mostly from me, because I was very sensitive at the time. So it's like, I'm still sensitive now. But this was different. This was more like ideologically attached to my ideas to a level that was unreasonable in a collaborative setting. So, like, if I, you know, Sam and I clashed, we'd have arguments, and it was not as much of a positive space, like around the River's End kind of era. And then gradually, as we got older and lots of things changed, we had a lot of experiences together. Like any relationship, we got sort of closer and we understood each other a bit better, and even more that's growing now. And especially because we're both dads, we're both in our late 30s, you know, we're both, you know, going through this. All of these changes, especially post-COVID. So it's like we have a really strong creative dynamic now where things are direct and quick, like quick fire between us, bang, 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 ideas back and forth. But that directness is never cruel or rude or clashes anymore. It's collaborative. So it's changed a lot over the years for the better, for sure.
Excellent. So you did a lot of ballet when you were younger.
I did.
You have also done a lot of training.
Mm-hmm.
You've dealt in the very feminine and you've dealt in the very masculine. I am wondering what the lessons are. Is there a balance? Is there something to be learned in masculinity from a lot of femininity and having a lot of experiences in things that are purposefully feminine? Or are they two separate categories of just being? Is there some sort of a dividing line, or is it more of a spectrum? And I don't mean in like the political, like gender ideology sense. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just mean, is there something that can be achieved for masculine men by coming very into contact with feminine virtues?
Actually, you know, what's interesting is that the more kind of like, probably what we might describe as feminine stuff that I, sort of celebrate about myself and accept about myself, the more I'm able to also accept and celebrate my masculine self. So, for example, like, I mean, like, I'm a lyricist, I'm a poet, you know, I like to paint my nails. I'm like a singer in a prog band. And when I sing, I like to close my eyes and be quite fluid and try to kind of emote as clearly as possible. Now, a lot of those things you might call feminine, I don't necessarily think that they arbitrarily are, but I mean, on a spectrum, on a scale, of course. But what that means is that, like, when you start looking at yourself that way and kind of go like, well, what are the aspects of myself that are more, that are softer, or the you know, that I can explore, that are kind of a little less harsh, or how do I soften myself? How do I make myself more approachable and more just nicer to be around? You kind of start seeing the spectrum of your real self, and you kind of go like, okay, well, I do have these things about me, and this is a truth about me, and I'm proud to be soft in that way. But also then I observe the moments and the times when I'm not, and the ways that I'm not. I'm like, this is how I'm strong. You know, we had an incident with my family. I won't go into it, but like, we had an incident with my family. We were attacked by a neighbor. There was a point where it was, I thought it was going to be life threatening, and we were really tested, and my wife got the kids out, and I stood and was ready to fight him with a knife in my house. So, like,
attacked by a neighbor.
Yeah. He was a druggo. It's a whole thing. He had a chainsaw. It was fucked up. Anyway. So, like, and in that moment, and it's still taking me years to process this, by the way, the trauma from that is not gone, but like, I stood my ground. I never expected myself to do anything like that. And when it came down to actually like fight or flight, life or death kind of thing, I stood and I was ready to fight. And so there's something about myself like that is, that's my masculinity. That's my, the core of myself, is I was ready to fight for my family when it came down to it. So like, and that's me. A soft guy who used to do ballet, sings in a band, all of that.
So two more questions for you. And first one is, you know, you have a new record that is, I'm just kind of curious if there's anything you can tell us about dates. And you said you didn't want to say much about it. I'm just curious if there's anything you can tell us about it that you're excited for.
Well, I mean, like arbitrarily, it's because it is true. I'm excited because we haven't done a release since 2020, and I'm fucking thrilled to put some stuff out there. I'm particularly excited about this one because there is some different stuff on there. It is kind of not an enormous holy shit, what are they doing? Genre departure, but there is a stylistic departure in that it's a little bit darker. And I'm looking forward to sharing that. And in terms of dates, I can't, but it won't be too long.
Hopefully. Excellent. And final question here. What are the future plans of the band in regards to touring? Is there any kind of American run in the future? I'm in America. People are here. We know you did Prague Power. Are you planning on coming to the States at some point in the next future?
Yes. Short answer, yes, absolutely. Long answer, we have had plans in the works for some time. Obviously, we had the tour in 2020, the ill-fated tour on Rise Radiant, which would have been in May 2020, which is when things just went crazy. So that never happened. We've been trying to make a return happen ever since, and it is now very much in the works. So, yes, short answer.
Excellent. So, do you have anything you want to say to fans, friends, and followers of the show? Anything you would like to mention, or?
Guys, you're the best. Literally the best.
Your fans are very, very into Caligula's Horse. Just for anyone listening, there are kids who are now emerging playing covers of very complicated guitar songs, frankly. And it's that level of engagement with the band is obviously there, and that's something that's great to see. Jim, it was phenomenal to finally talk to you today. I will be happy to talk to you again in the future. You need to shout out your podcast.
I do
all of your stuff.
I do actually have my own podcast. It's called The Music in Everything. It's not actually about music, despite the name. It's me, my brother, and my sister-in-law basically diving into topics that they research and trying to find out what it is that makes those things sing. So we're trying to find the joy in new stuff. We've done episodes on things like coffee, on cave diving, on chilies, you know, dinosaurs, all kinds of stuff. So it's sort of edutainment focused. It's really, really fun, and we've had a blast with it. The other thing I did want to shout out while I'm here is that I do stream on Twitch. Also not music. This stream, I've created something of a comfort community with a number of people who feel at home there. And I Twitch under I stream under the name of The Real Jim Gray on Twitch. And we play games, we hang out, we have a good time.
Excellent, Jim. So it was great to talk to you today. I will have the links to all of that stuff because you sent them right below in the YouTube section and on Spotify. Well, signing off here, Jim Gray, Zeke Sky. Thank you guys so much for tuning in.
Thanks, guys. Bye.